Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of two books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, well, you know, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Don't forget to do all the other things that you can do on our website, like listen to archives of historic shows all the way back to, five or six years of shows there. Over 3,000 archives of past interviews that we've done, including some that we've done with our guest this half hour, Mr. Jim Copeland, who's the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, and he's a member of our Brain Trust. Jim Copeland, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here and talk about an important issue.
Yeah, we're going to talk about tort reform, and that's an area that you work on very much. I know that's something that you feel very passionate about. You work with your another one of your fellows, Walter Olson, who's been a guest on the show talking about this. And you authored a report called Tragic Solutions, the 911 Victim Compensation Fund, Historic Antecedents and Lessons for Tort Reform. And I want to talk about some of the things that you found in that you found and identified in your report. You know, Jim, tort reform is a very important issue. And a lot of people, though I actually am concerned that a lot of people hear that term, and it's just not an intuitive term, tort reform, for most of us as we go about our daily lives. What do you think?
I think that's true. Our legal system's complicated. If you ask most people to define a tort, I think it'd be hard to do. I mean,
well, they would say, is it got strawberries and some whipped cream or something like that?
Exactly. So, I mean, legally, it's from the Latin. It sort of means a wrong, but it basically is any type of injury that one person suffers from another that doesn't involve a consensual sort of contractual relationship. So the vast majority of a lot of the lawsuits that are out there that we hear about are torts, and that's where we talk about tort reform. It's not contract law, and it's not antitrust law or other areas of law, but it's a large subset of all the litigation that's out there.
Well, so, Jim, one of the things that my audience knows, and this is not just something that I'm mentioning anecdotally. I've actually polled small business owners in conferences where I have moderated panels and have talked to larger groups of small business owners. I've actually polled them and to find out what are the most important concerns that they have about things that may put them in jeopardy in their businesses. And tort reform, the frivolous lawsuit issue, is always in the top three for small businesses.
That doesn't surprise me. I think that's probably true for small as well as big businesses. I think it's particularly troubling for small businesses in the context that, you know, they don't have in-house legal counsel. They don't have quite the sophistication in dealing with this. A big business can view this as a cost of doing business. It's obviously a high cost, so it's not something that any business is happy about. But for a small business, you know, a lawsuit can be crippling. It can you know, it'd be the end of the business entirely. So,
well, the reason is Jim, is because when a lawsuit comes into a big business, the CEO knows about it, but he or she goes about their daily business, and they check in, you know, once a week or so on how things are going, but they still continue to march. When it lands on the desk of a small business CEO, there's no place for it to go. Okay, you can give it to the attorney, but the attorney who's a contractor that you hire, but that attorney can't do anything. I mean, can't do as very much without a lot of input from the CEO of the small business, and it could almost shut down the business.
Exactly. So I think it's a very important issue, and the paper you mentioned was something that I wrote For a conference we did in Washington a couple of weeks ago on the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund, which was interesting because it's something that's it's not precisely unprecedented in the sense, you know, going back to, say, the War of 1812, there have been federal funds set up for victims in various contexts. But certainly in the modern era, it's unprecedented. Certainly in terms of size, it's unprecedented. The compensation fund that was set up so that victims could opt into this fund and get generous treatment and do that instead of suing the airlines and suing Boeing and suing the New York Port Authority, et cetera, for the injuries that happened in 9/11. So we wanted to look at that and see what lessons we could draw for tort reform, and there's some interesting ones.
I want to talk about that when we come back after these messages. Very interesting stuff here, folks, with our good friend Jim Copeland with the Manhattan Institute. It's 20 Till. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our friend Jim Copeland, who's with the Manhattan Institute. He's the director for the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, and we're talking about tort reform. Jim, tort reform is one of the issues that Mr. Bush wants to take on, along with tax reform and along with Social Security reform. He's making this one of the prongs in his arsenal to try to forge an ownership society, isn't he?
He certainly is, and we're very excited about that. He certainly has been a champion of this issue dating back to his days as governor. He did a lot of successful tort reform while he was governor of Texas, and he's been supportive of tort reform throughout his first term, or he was supportive through his first term, but now he's really, for the second term, decided to make this a top priority and has been speaking around the country on it, you know, highlighted it at his economic conference. So I think we have a pretty good prospect of some legislation getting through at the national level, given the fact that, you know, Republicans are not only in control of both houses, but the number of Republicans in the Senate is sufficiently high that the possibility to break filibusters and actually get legislation through, I think, is there. There are a few different types of legislation out there. One is reforming the class action system so that you can't shop for small county state courts that are very friendly to class actions that affect the national economy. One is asbestos reform.
Pardon me, Jim. On the class action, isn't the remedy to go to make class actions a federal, put the class actions in federal court instead of in local courts?
Exactly. So basically, if it's over $5 million and it's a national class, they have to go to federal court, which means that, you know, the class certification would be appealable to the Court of Appeals, would make it, you know, harder for plaintiff's lawyers to shop for these judges that are elected.
And regions that seem to provide jackpot juries.
Exactly. I mean, we've done studies on this at the Manhattan Institute, looking at places like Madison County, Illinois, which the American Tort Reform Association recently, for the second year in a row, called the top judicial hellhole in the country. And we've seen, you know, thousands of percent increase in the volume of class action filings in that county. You've got a county that, you know, is 250,000 people, and it's got more class actions filed there than any county except, say, Los Angeles County or Cook County, where Chicago is, the giant county. So it's a significant problem, and this would it's a real federal issue because you've got national cases that affect the national economy across all states, and a lot of times they're trumping other states' laws and other states' regulations.
Right.
So to put it in federal court makes a lot of sense for those types of cases.
Right. Now, the what will be the result what would be the structure of the legislation to change tort reform? I guess what I'm struggling with is part of the problem we got with tort reform is us. I mean, it's like Pogo, you know, said we looked at the enemy and he is us. And the reason is because haven't we become a society of victims? Don't we? We're so litigious. We think that every time something happens to us, it must be somebody else's fault and they must pay.
Well, I think there's some of that, but I think there's no question that the legal rules also facilitate that type of culture. So if you can change the legal rules and change the way those rules are interpreted and enforced by the courts, by the judges, then you can start to undo some of that psychology and some of that culture. So, you know, We're unique among developed countries in having what we call the American rule, or a rule where even if you lose your case, you don't have to pay the other side's legal expenses. Mm-hmm. That way, even if you win your case, you effectively lose because you have to pay a lot to your lawyers,
right,
and a lot to defend the case, not to mention assuming the risk of potentially losing the case. You know, this facilitates more frivolous claims. It actually deters legitimate claims. I mean, a small business that wants to bring a case is going to have a tough time doing it if it's a small amount of money. So they're going to have, you know, these are more contract than tort cases, but they're going to have, you know, other businesses that they do business with sometimes monkey them around because they know it's not worth their while to file legal claim for $7,000, $8,000 or what have you. So the system really creates this kind of incentive, the contingency fee system, where lawyers operate on a percentage basis instead of, you know, an hourly basis, or there's not sufficient judicial oversight over these contingency fees compared to other countries, creates a lot of abuses.
Will part of the reform be where law firms can't shop for, I mean, you were talking about shopping a minute ago, they shop for plaintiffs, and where whenever the settlement is finally given, many of them enormous, most of the money goes to the attorneys and a very small percentage actually goes to the plaintiffs that they shop for. Is that going to be part of the reform?
Well, for class action cases, you know, that's the inherent problem. I mean, class action cases are supposed to stop the problem I talked about, where if you have a small injury, it's hard to bring a claim because it's too expensive. And the notion is, if the cases are actually similar, you can aggregate them all and make it worth your while. But the problem with that is the plaintiffs then, each of them's got such a small stake, they don't have any incentive or ability to monitor the attorneys. If you're a business and, you know, you're filing a significant claim, you know, you can watch what your attorneys do. But in these cases, there's a lot of potential for abuse, and, you know, as you say, the attorneys can get sometimes huge percentages of the fees,
right,
because of coupon settlements and things like that.
In the billions of dollars,
right,
in some cases. Stand by, Jim. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to find out. We're going to get Jim to talk to us about his thoughts on the 911 Victims Fund and what that has to do with tort reform. It's 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The darkness cries. Only
we're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Lysingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jim Copeland is our guest, and Jim is with the Manhattan Institute. Jim, tell us a little bit about Manhattan Institute and the website, please.
Sure. Manhattan Institute was founded just over 25 years ago. It's a public policy research center committed to free markets and individual responsibility. You know, we publish books, studies, pamphlets. We host conferences, seminars, and of course we speak and write in various fora. And, you know, tort reform is one of the major issues we've been involved in for quite some time. We were, you know, at the vanguard of welfare reform back in the early 80s. We worked on safe policing in the cities. We worked a lot. So a lot of the Giuliani administration's ideas, the broken windows theories, came out of Manhattan Institute. We worked a lot on education reform. We're working a lot on medical progress, housing, et cetera. And of course, legal reform since the mid-80s. We've got a couple of websites. Pointoflaw.com is our website that we manage that has a number of legal scholars and experts, including myself and Walter Olson, you know, talking about different tort reform items of the day. You can look at different historical articles of interest, you know, current articles of interest, separated by topic if we want to look at asbestos or medicine and the law.
Right.
comparative
law,
etc.
And also, what's the main website?
The main website is Manhattan-Institute.org,
okay.
and from there you can go to our Center for Legal Policy page as well as
right.
other pages. You know, it also could be interesting to our, to listeners to visit our TrialLawyersInc.com website, which is from our 2003 Trial Lawyers Inc. report, but it's sort of a comprehensive overview of some of the major issues involved in sort of fighting the litigation explosion, and it really looks as sort of an annual report type overview of the litigation industry.
Jim, do you have, before we get into the 911 issue, the 911 compensation issue, do you have the number of what the total cost of tort expense is in the United States?
It's
annually,
by the best estimates, which are done by Tillinghast Towers parent consulting firm, it's over $240 billion.
And doesn't about 60-something percent of that go attribute to small businesses? Did I read that somewhere?
I'm not 100%
over half of,
sure
of the expenses.
True, but
the government, but a high percentage, a very high percentage.
It's certainly a lot that comes out of small businesses.
I don't have those numbers in front of me, but it was a startling number. How much? And you guys correctly call it a tort tax. It is tantamount to a tax that we have to deal with every year. Listen, I do want to move over and talk about the 911 fund because that was an important part of your paper. Talk to us about what your perspectives are on this. Is the 911 compensation fund for the families of the victims, right, Jim?
Exactly. The federal government, 11 days, I think, after September 11th, very, very quickly, the Congress passed legislation capping awards for the airlines at the existing insurance policy limits because they didn't want the airlines to be bankrupted by the terrorist attack. And ultimately, that was also extended to, I think, the airplane manufacturers and the Port Authority, et cetera. And sort of in exchange for that, victims could opt into a federal system where it was basically a limitless fund, but it was a fund set up to compensate them for their economic and non-economic damages. Mm-hmm. And a lot of discretion was given to Ken Feinberg, who's a very prominent attorney who was the administrator of this fund.
Right.
And he basically capped non-economic damages at $250,000. Economic damages were a function of, actual injury, if it was an injury, or if it was a death case, it would be, future expected earnings loss.
Jim, I've only got about a minute left. What is going to be the result of that fund? It's not unprecedented, but in terms of the scope of it, that was unprecedented, wasn't it?
It was. I think the real takeaway from it is the administrative cost of this fund was 1% of the cost versus for our tort system as a whole, it's about 54%. Only 46% of the cost actually goes to the plaintiff. So it's much, much cheaper to set something like that up. Mm-hmm. And when we're thinking about something like the asbestos fund,
right.
I think that's sort of the model we want to use. It can be much, much cheaper to administer those claims. And you can also, what that didn't have was an actual way to determine, are these people actually injured? Because
right.
basically most of these people were killed or they had to go to the hospital within 72 hours of the attack.
Right.
So you knew if they were injured. If we're setting up something like an asbestos fund or if it were a pharmaceutical
it's
fund
more
or something.
It's problematic, isn't it?
There's got to be a way to determine where's the medical injury.
Jim, this isn't the last. We're going to hear about this and we want you to come back as we'll have also your colleague Walter Olson back as we talk more about tort reform this year. Thank you for the part that Manhattan Institute is playing in this debate.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim Copeland, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I will be too. I got to take a quick break. I'm Jim Blassingame. This program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.